Oh my goodness, it is that time of the year again. It must mean that summer is over. It's time for the Doc Talk Podcast, brought to you by our good friends at the Remington Trophy and Mr. Dave Remington. Of course, Dr. Rob Zadiska joins me yet for another season. And before we even get to what we're going to talk about, Doc, you and I have both been to the Remington Trophy presentation. And I think you and I both agree that when you buy tickets to go see that presentation at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln, it is the best trophy presentation that I think you and I have ever been to, isn't it?
Well, I think you and I have only gone to one together. I mean, I've been to a few. I will say that.
But it's a great presentation. I mean, the Rococo Theater, the whole atmosphere. I mean, Dave really does it up right for his trophy presentation.
You know what? They do a great job with it. And, you know, you and I talked about this last year going into the, well, I guess it would have been the 2014 presentation, but it was for the 2013 season. But we went to that, and it was a great time. He does a wonderful job because, I mean, if you want a who's who of both Husker greats, as well as you think about, Dave had a pretty long, pretty distinguished NFL career. There is always a ton of NFL guys that come back for it as well. And so it's, you look around the place, it's kind of a who's who of football history one room.
It is the place to be seen. And this year's Remington Trophy presentation takes place January 17th at the Rococo Theater. For sponsorships, for tables, or individual tickets, just go to RemingtonTrophy.com. A week ago, Rob, we're getting ready for Big Ten Media Days. Nothing really earth-shattering coming out of Chicago. I think probably the biggest highlight for the Huskers, really, was Amir Abdullah's speech, where he made a big impression with the media, made a big impression with other coaches and other players from around the Big Ten, just on how well-spoken he was and the message he delivered.
Okay, he kind of went the whole student-athlete route, which, I mean, it's kind of a nice point that he made in that regard, that it's kind of a little bit close to my heart. So, you know, I thought it was nice.
Let me ask you this.
I don't know if that's any. I don't think it's a big surprise for anybody who's a Nebraska fan, though. The guy's always been. I've always thought very intelligent. He's always been a very intelligent guy. Any interview you hear with him, the guy's always on. He's always well spoken. He's always intelligent. He's always articulate. And I think it kind of speaks to his maturity. But I think that's something you kind of knew going into the season, partly because when you looked at the end of last year and the guy, he was a heck of a running back. I thought he could have gone to the NFL last year, but I thought it showed a lot of maturity. And if you heard the kind of the press release that he made when he decided to come back for a senior season, which I think was expected, but I think there was a lot of Husker fans who were kind of scared he might go pro. I remember even going back to then, when you heard the guy speak, he's a guy who I think he's ahead of himself in years than you'd think. Yep. He's a little bit of an older soul.
You know about the politics that goes in, and you're 100% right, and that is Husker fans know what to expect from Amir Abdullah, but you know the politics that goes into postseason awards, and I think that speech is a good kickoff for Amir Abdullah if he's going to have the season we think he's going to have as a running back and racking up individual honors. That's a good way to put him in the limelight. And you know, there's politics later on and how you get nominated for awards and in the way people get into those award situations.
Well, it is, and I think, you know, in terms of how you're perceived, you see so many guys who it's 100%. Based upon how they look on the field. And I guess I'm looking at somebody like Jadeveon Clowney last year, who's an absolutely unbelievable talent on the field. I'm not sure he really represented himself well off the field, mm-hmm. mainly because it seemed like he was off the field a lot. But he's not the kind of guy that you looked at and went, man, here is a major high character guy. But I think when you look at sports today, when you look at football, when you look at college football, I think the character thing is something that's growing on people. And I think it's something that tends to have more and more clout over time. When there's so much focus to a degree on what's wrong with sports and what's wrong with student athletes, where it's kind of like what Amir touched on, where there's too much emphasis on the athlete and not the student part. And I think his speech really kind of focused on the first half of that. It does. It speaks to his character. And I think that's something where when you look at how the guy's going to be perceived through the rest of the season, I think it tends to resonate very well with the media.
How much?
The media likes two things. They like a disaster, or they like a feel. They love the ultimate feel good story. And right here, here's a guy who's a high character guy who's already kind of carved out a little bit of a reputation for himself as being a feel-good story for this season.
Knowing the way the Big Ten Conference felt about Northwestern going after the unionization of players and the paying of players, do you think he was well coached by the Big Ten? Do you think he was coached by the University of Nebraska not to go there, to focus on the student-athlete as a whole and just don't even get into the pay-for-play thing?
You know, I got to be honest. Truthfully, that's kind of hard to say because, I mean, they always tell you, hey, you know, here's the thing. They don't tell you what to say, but they do make the point like, listen, you're going to be in a little bit of fishbowl here, and there's going to be a lot of people listening to this, and everything you say, it's getting put down on paper, it's going out on audio, and it's going out on the internet. There's a lot of people who are going to hear this, and you better represent yourself well, and you better understand that you are representing a lot of other people, and in this case, the university and the football team. And so I'm sure they probably sat him down and told him that. I doubt they said, don't answer these questions, don't address this, don't address that. But I don't think it was a case where he went into this where they were saying, hey, don't talk about pay for play and don't talk about unionization of players. And he went, oh, okay, well, I'll talk about student athletes instead. I think it truly came from the heart. And I think this was something that he went up there and said, hey, you know what? Here's who I am, and here's what I would like to represent, and here's what I would like people to think of Nebraska football all in regards to, and I think he put that out there very well.
Now, in the previous week, the Big 12 media days, Bob Bowlesby came out and said, obviously players should not be paid, but he also went farther and said it pays to cheat in college sports right now. Jim Delaney was not as bold in his statements and didn't make as many headlines as Bob Bowlesby did for the Big 12, but he didn't deny what Bob Bowlesby was saying. Is Bob Bowlesby correct in college athletics, especially college football, it pays to cheat right now?
That's kind of a rough question. I mean, I understand the take on it because I think money has infiltrated so much. And you look at the situation, let's backtrack a couple of years to when Cam Newton was down at Auburn. You know, you always talk about where there's smoke, there's fire. And in that situation, there was so much smoke, it was ridiculous. I mean, it's hard for me to look at that situation and go, okay, you know what? I mean, everybody knows somewhere money changed hands. Not saying it went into Cam Newton's hands. I think it went to his dad, but you know what? Somewhere money changed hands from somebody with that situation. There was just way too much smoke for there not to be a fire. And the NCAA kind of looked at it and said, well, geez, you know what? We just really didn't find anything. And everybody else on the entire planet is sitting there going, okay, you want this number one matchup of Auburn versus Oregon in a national title game. And if you hammer Auburn and Cam Newton with sanctions and ineligibility, that's not going to happen. We don't want to rock the boat and screw up this major money, incredible TV rating commercial extravaganza. I have a hard time believing there wasn't some at least mild conspiracy brush sweeping things under the rug there. I really don't. There's a situation where cheating paid off, and I think the NCAA kind of I think they turn their heads a little bit. I really do.
You know why? Because the NCAA, when it comes down to it, a bunch of pussies, Rob. And let me tell you why. Because they're
you came out harsh there.
They are. The NCAA are a bunch of pussies. They like to sit there and think that they're big talkers, and they got this big, you know, wing that's going to come down hard on cheaters. But at the end of the day, they look at the big boys, the BCS conference schools, and if they go, if we come down hard on these guys, they're just going to bolt. They're going to go do their own thing. I mean, already, the Big Ten.
Well, you got to keep in mind, I mean, everybody, Well, you got to keep in mind who is the NC2A, and it's the schools themselves.
The member institutions.
And so these schools are sitting here going, holy crap, I mean, we've got all this money to make. I mean, you got all these major universities that are going to get a cut out of this. You know, you're coming down hard on yourself. You're kind of shooting yourself in the foot a little bit.
Yeah, but you know, nobody gets a TV ban anymore. You can't ban anybody from TV. USC got a bowl ban, but what did that really do? That didn't cripple them. So really, the sanctions that come down on schools anymore doesn't really hurt these schools. So that's why I think that Bob Boolsby said, listen, it pays to cheat. But at the end of the day, Bob Boolsby and the schools that he represents, and along with the Big Ten and the SEC, they're the reason for it, because it's such a huge conglomerate now. It's like a cartel. It's like a drug cartel. These guys are so big, they're calling the shots, aren't they?
I think they are. Well, and that's kind of what I meant with the whole Auburn thing. I mean, you know what? You got all these schools that are movers and shakers within the NC2A from a monetary standpoint. And when there's money to be made or there's money to be lost, you know what? I think you got to do what's going to be best for the bottom line at the end of the day. And I think that's what happens to a fair degree within the sport.
Rob, you like good beer, don't you? You like really good beer, don't you?
I love beer, Travis.
Well, I got to tell you, I want to welcome one of the newest sponsors to the Doc Talk podcast, and that would be the Benson Brewery at 6059 Maple Street. Just go visit them at bensonbrewery.com. They are now open for lunch every single day. I had a pulled pork sandwich there the other day with a jalapeno coleslaw, Rob. Oh, my God. It like melted in my mouth, had that little spice to it. And now they've got the spacious beer gardens all set up on Sunday nights. They've got a 20-foot movie screen out there, $3 pints later in the evening. Then they show a movie on Sunday nights. They're going to have some live acoustic music out there. And most of all, Rob.
Do you know what else they have there?
Great beer.
Beer.
Beer. My favorite is the stunt double. And so, Rob, here's the deal. If you don't mind, maybe a couple times during the year, you and I just go to the Benson Brewery and do a couple podcasts there. What do you think of that?
Man, I don't know, Travis. All that beer there, that's going to be kind of tough.
we'll just get a bunch of, just a bunch of samples. We'll just sample everything they have.
I'm okay with that.
See?
I really am.
If you haven't been to the Benson Brewery, it's in the heart of Benson. Just go to bensonbrewery.com. Bo Pelini dressed up. It was early Halloween the other day, Rob. He came out and surprised the guys in the new alternate.
Oh, the Rutgers uniform?
Now, do you not like them?
I hate them.
You hate them?
I hate them as much as I hated the black uniforms.
Why?
I can't tell who we are. I hate the whole uniform changing thing. I'm too old school. I don't buy into the whole Oregon thing. Unless you're Oregon, then it's okay.
Because that's what they do. That's what Oregon does. That's where they've made their tradition is different uniforms. So you know, there's a lot of people that fall into your corner. I actually didn't mind the red helmets as much. I guess I didn't mind them as much as the black ones. But
the black ones that look like Texas Tech. This looks like it looks like all of a sudden we've morphed into Rutgers.
Hey, at least you're not Maryland yet with a really screwed up helmet and with flags all over the place. But there are a lot of people, a lot of old blue hairs, Rob, that fall into this. We don't need to be changing our goddamn uniforms.
That's why I shave my head.
Those sons of bitches.
I just, you know what? It's not my thing. It's kind of one of those, you know what? They tried the all white thing, and I'm like, you're putting up surrender colors. You go the all black, and it's like, great, now we're Texas Tech. You go all red, it's like, awesome, now we're Rutgers. It's like, for Pete's sakes, just freaking put on the Nebraska uniform. Be Nebraska.
And that is white pants, red jersey at home, and red pants, white jersey on the road.
Flip it. Keep the helmet the same. You know what? Here's my take on it. Pardon the double negative here, but I never not won a conference championship while wearing the old uniform. I got a national title ring wearing the old uniform. Every year I stepped onto the field, I won some kind of championship. And I'm not talking about a division title. A division title is not a championship. That means you won the semifinal. That's it.
So what you're saying is the new uniforms blow, right, Rob?
They suck ass.
They suck ass.
And you know what? I'm sure they're going to
hold on. You did a double negative, and they suck ass all in like the same 1 minute span.
Oh man, it's just it's an intellectual degradation here in this conversation. Horrible. But you know, it's just it's not my cup of tea. And I appreciate there's a marketing aspect to all of this. There really is. There's a branding issue here afoot.
It's just a matter.
It's not my cup of tea. You know what? I will tell you what, I will buy into it when Penn State changes their uniforms.
Or Alabama?
Or Alabama. Of course, in Penn State, up in Happy Valley, apparently, like, they buy into that whole sex with boys thing. So,
Rob!
That was horrible.
Notre Dame's gone the alternate uniform route.
Yeah, when was the last time they won a championship?
Wow. They've played for one before Nebraska has, though.
Yeah, and guess what? They got beat just about as bad in their most recent national title game as Nebraska did in their most recent national title game.
Wow. Damn. Now, these uniforms, you know, of all the things that I thought would get you fired up in the first podcast, I did not think it would be the red uniforms. You know, it's just a matter of time before they change the N. You know that.
Those things don't even say that. It's not right.
It's a matter of time. You're going to have a completely different N.
Yeah, you know what? You're going away from the winning tradition when you do that.
Hell, there hasn't been a winning tradition in a while. And that's what's weird. That leads me to my next topic, is that here we're...
Okay, come on. Okay, you got Pelini who's winning, 75% of his games?
And you know what? He's winning 75% of his games. And let's be honest, he's on the hot seat more than any other Big Ten coach.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with his win-loss record.
No, it doesn't. He's trying to... he's hoping... I really believe this. I think he's hoping a cat saves his ass this year. and what I mean by that, it's showing he's embraced the faux Pelini Twitter thing, and he's kind of shown his softer side. He's opening practice to the media this fall, much like he did in the spring. He's softened his stance in hopes of saving his job.
You know what? I think that'll help. I got to be honest with you. You know, you think about back to the end of last season with Pelini, and there seems to be a disconnect between Pelini and you've got a new athletic director. I don't know if calling him the new athletic director is the right thing at this point now that the guy's been on the job for nearly a year. But you've got an athletic director who did not hire him. I don't know if he specifically got a problem with Pelini, I think you've got an athletic director who doesn't have any heartfelt loyalty to the guy.
Let me ask you this. Have you heard the rumors? And I'm going to bring it because this is a podcast. We'll talk about rumors. That Sean Eichhorst was going to fire Bo Pelini after the Iowa game last year, but Tom Osborne and Howard Hawks intervened, put a stop to it. And
I have heard the rumors.
And basically spent their last piece of capital. And I'm being serious. I mean, that was like the last thing they could pull off. And then that's why you see a guy like Paul Myers disappear. You're going to start seeing other changes. That was like the last. They saved him, but that was it. That's all they could do.
Kind of make you wonder because the last time Paul Myers disappeared, the athletic director got fired. But
yeah, but you know what? This guy's not getting fired because he hadn't done anything.
No, and I don't think he is. Well, and it's one of those things where I understand the fact that it's the good old boy network. Well, I was going to say doesn't exist anymore, but it really does. It's just it's based on different values now. It's, you know what, if you thought that Bill Byrne came in.
And by the way, that's not a bad thing. You do have to evolve somewhere. You can't stay stuck. But you got to, let's be honest, as much as, and I don't disagree with you about your uniforms, but people can't be stuck in the 1990s anymore. They don't exist anymore.
No, and I understand that. I guess here's my problem, and here's the thing I worry about. And if Eichhorst feels like, hey, I think I need to make a change, and I've got good reasons for needing to make that change, I get that. I'm kind of a Pelini fan, though. I think he has done good things in Lincoln.
I like the guy. I agree with you.
He's a good coach. Here's the problem with the situation that I will forever worry about, and I think if you're a Nebraska fan, you should be insanely worried about this. It's that whole – I think there is a lot of athletic administrators out there who have this potentially very false image of they're going to get rid of the – bird in hand to go after the two in the bush, but the two in the bush aren't there.
Just don't put one in the tush.
Exactly. And I think that's what Steve Peterson did. I think
it's called the shocker, isn't it?
Yeah. Good Lord. But I think Peterson was in this situation where he was going to make a change and he was going to bring in some Bob Stoops, Urban Meyer,
Dave Wannstedt.
Yeah, that would have gone over awesome. Look how well he's done. But you know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
He was going to hire the next great Nick Saban-type coach to Lincoln, Nebraska, and it ended up just being an absolute, utter disaster. I mean, you better have the next great guy coming in. And I mean,
Scott Frost, baby. Scott Frost.
I think Scott would do a good job.
Is he ready to be a head? Is he ready to be a head coach though? Is he ready to be a head coach?
It's a massive, massive jump. It is a huge jump from a coordinator to a head coach. And look at a guy like Solich who sat there groomed to be the next guy for years, and then he hit the door as head coach and realized, oh my God, there's this learning curve that's just astronomical. I mean, it's few and far in between the guys who can make that jump. I mean, take a guy like Brady Hoke, for instance. You got a guy like Brady Hoke who was successful at a couple of different programs that it's not easy to be successful at. Got hired at Michigan. He was a Michigan guy. Got hired at Michigan with, talk about a program that where they're going to – it's like Notre Dame. If you want all the resources under the sun, here it is. Money, facilities, recruiting, history, tradition. I mean, the works. I mean, he had one good – I say had. It's like he's been fired already. Hoke had one great season at Michigan, and it was year one.
Hey, he's on the hot seat too. And with Rich Rod's players, who, by the way, has got a pretty good
he's
team.
He's kind of – I mean, he's – yeah, but he's hurting. I mean, Hoke is hurting.
Absolutely. Right. He's on a hot seat, too. I mean, you can't come
he
in.
He is. And so that's – but, I mean, that's my point is that, I mean, you make a change, you better be ready. I mean, They kind of forced out Lloyd Carr. What did they end up with? Rich Rodriguez. Fired Rodriguez. I thought it was just not a good fit. But they brought in Hoke. They thought he'd be a great fit. You know what? It worked out okay year one, but, boy, it just really hasn't done much since. So – you know what, you try and make these coaching changes, I mean, it's a potential minefield. And in a place like Nebraska, where in fans' minds, the bare minimum for a good year is 9 wins, I mean, that's going to be tough. I mean, and especially the other thing is that Nebraska football pays all the bills. Now, I understand men's basketball makes some money. Volleyball kind of, sort of, maybe breaks even if you really twist
if you move the numbers around in the Excel spreadsheet. Yeah,
it's one of those things where, you know what, I know enough from talking to guys that I know, or let me rephrase that, used to know in Lincoln. Talking to these guys, you know what, you have one sub-9-win season. You have one year that maybe you don't go to a bowl game. Dollars dry up quick.
Yes, they do.
And when that football team is paying a lot of bills, I mean, they're paying more than just athletic department budgets. I mean, let me put it this way. I mean, for whatever Eichhorst and Perlman are thinking about, last time I checked, I think the law library is funded by the football team.
I think everything's funded by the football team, isn't it?
Yeah, so before you go and fire a coach and delve back into the whole Steve Peterson Callahan era of pissed off boosters and fans leaving late second quarter, you know what? Think about what you're doing first, because a lot of dollars are hinging on this. And you better be thinking you're making the right move monetarily before you go and make that move.
Look at this. We had, the season hasn't even started, and we've already started the speculation, Rob. That's what I love about the Doc Talk podcast. You're absolutely amazing. And of course, we want to thank this year's presenting sponsor of the Doc Talk podcast, the Remington Trophy. Dave Remington, a good friend of both Dr. Rob's and myself. The Remington Trophy presentation coming up at the Rococo Theater January 17th, 2015. It's the place to be. You won't be disappointed. For sponsorship information, to buy your tables or even buy your tickets, just go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Rob, next week we'll dive right into the well, we'll start with the East Division. Should we talk about the Big Ten East next week?
Or as I like to call it, the home of the Big Ten champions.
Last year
and probably this year again.
He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on another Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.